Pantene's, baby.
Hello and welcome to the tech podcast that you didn't ask for, but I don't know, y'all enjoyed listening to it. It's called Two and a Half Bens, and
the few that are still listening.
Yeah, the few of us that are still listening, right? Well, this is a different kind of a tech podcast because it's not hosted by a chief twit or I don't know, a pedo or I don't know, some whatever. Just people that are fapping all over tech because we're grumpy.
What I like to say is it's the difference between a tech enthusiast and someone who's actually been boots on the ground in the industry.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to describe it.
Yeah, so. I was actually going to say, I wouldn't go so far as to say it's a podcast, you know, that's not hosted by a pedo. I've seen your search history in Pornhub, sir.
Jesus Christ. Well, we should probably introduce ourselves.
If you I hope you're talking to him.
If you don't know who you are, I'm Phone Boy.
I'm Phoenix.
And I am Sir Bemrose.
Okay, so there
we
go.
We are, of course, up to no good yet again, giving each other a hard time, and tech,
and
for
tech
that matter.
Okay, so I have an AI story. No surprise, right?
But oh, no, shit, really?
Yeah, I know. It seems like that's all the fucking news is these days, right? Well, so there's this.
Wait, I've got it.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Yeah, well. Okay, so this is an Ars Technica piece, and it says LLM's simulated reasoning abilities are a brittle mirage, according to researchers. Well, if you've ever
reasoning abilities.
With these things.
Wait a minute. Oh my God, I can't believe you pulled this story, and I'll tell you why. You and I were having a behind-the-mic conversation about my professor and the fact he actually said that an LLM, a.k.a. a ChatGPT, was able to reason. I nearly fell out of my chair. I kid you not.
Okay, so this guy needs to go back to school.
Right. I wanted so bad. My tongue was bleeding by the end of the class in some of the things he was saying because the guy is extremely smart. Okay.
Yeah, he's a good dude.
But
I mean,
at
I've
the
met
same
him.
Time,
yeah.
He's embracing AI like a kid with a teddy bear, and it scares the shit out of me.
Well, see, the thing is, if it was me, I would have just taken him to court in the room, be like, why do you think this is the case?
Well, but, I can tell
you. I'm also the kind of person who already has my degree, and therefore I really don't care what the professors think anymore.
Well, I will tell you that when he called on me and said, "You're good at summing things up," I stood up and I said, "In summary, sir, I don't trust AI, and I think that every time you use it to do a task that you yourself could do, you're giving a piece of your autonomy away until there's nothing left because it has no soul."
In summary, sir, you're full of shit.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, it's also the citation needed thing.
Although you use better words for it.
I'm going to use citation needed hugely the next time that he wants to use the, you know, AI can reason or does reason. I'm going to literally state citation needed, professor.
Yeah, because I mean, it was funny because you and I had kind of CSB was posting something kind of irrelevant that AI had put out, and I'm thinking to myself, like, how do you know? And you said citation needed, and that pretty much says it all because it's like because.
Yeah.
So, and I think it gets into the story here. So the AI industry has started moving towards so-called simulated reasoning models that use a chain of thought process to work through tricky problems and multiple logical steps. And actually, this is something I know that in the day job some of the AIs they've done this right.
Some quality marketing bullshit right there.
Yeah. But when you're doing something very focused, yeah, a chain of thought can be kind of useful. But at the same time, the recent research has cast doubt on whether those models have even a basic understanding of general logical concepts or an accurate grasp of their own thought process.
They don't understand anything. Do you think that autocorrect understands anything?
Well, we all know ChatGPT is just autocorrect on steroids.
Dear autocorrect, it's never duck.
It's auto corrupt. I mean, or auto fuck as we refer to it.
Okay, I have a question because as only
auto duck.
As only half a Ben, maybe I'm just unintelligent enough to ask this question that more grammatically correct, aren't LLMs, ChatGPT, all that shit, the only way they know what they know is because it's fed in by a human. Is that not still what the fuck is going on here?
Well, it's fed into their training model from the data set that they got it from. And however the data set gets in, I mean, you know, once we reach the point where LLMs are feeding themselves data sets and there's no human engineer involved, then, you know, you've just accelerated the model collapse. But
well, you don't think that's where we're already hitting that button?
I think that might be, but I would believe still that there's teams of engineers because, well, you know, companies like OpenAI are totally cool with everyone else putting all their employees out of business because AI can do everything. I have a story about that one later. They still value their own engineers. And of course their own engineers, you know, have internal mail. So if they actually, you know, can you imagine if Sam Altman came out and said, okay guys, you've made a great product and it's replacing all your jobs now.
I can see that happening.
You know, I could,
there'd be
but
a nuclear
friggin' see,
meltdown, but
yeah,
I can see
I can also see the building burning down not long after. They're not going to take that.
Oh
sitting
yeah.
Down.
I don't know how that fire started, officer. Well, the other side of that, too, I actually was having a conversation with Phone Boy behind the mic about I started into my digital forensics course and kind of freaked like a cat on ice. And I'm like, why the hell am I putting myself through this? I'm going to be 50 more or less right before I get my degree. Who the fuck's going to hire a 50-year-old tech person with zero experience other than I went to school and got a piece of paper? So I kind of had that little meltdown this morning because of AI essentially taking all the fucking jobs, whether we want to admit it or not. Unless people smarten the fuck up or the bubble burst beforehand, any tech person who's not already established in the job that AI technically can't do, like Phone Boy, yeah, we're fucked.
Well, if I may reassure you a little bit, the only jobs that AI can genuinely do are the jobs that were either make work or you know, anybody with half a degree was way overqualified.
Okay,
it doesn't think, it doesn't reason, it can't problem solve. What it can do,
that's the problem.
This is what LLMs have done from the very beginning, and they're very good at it because the models are freaking huge and the amount of data they've got is insane. But the only thing these things can do is throw together a chain of words that some human in their training data said once. It's one of the reasons, like last episode, when I brought out the, you know, one of the potential reasons for hallucination might be all the jokers and stuff in, you know, on Twitter and Reddit, which are the two biggest sources for the LLM data sets, is some, you know, so it might hallucinate something because some human said it, and maybe, you know, they can't think, they can't reason, and, you know, obviously they're not going to be able to tell that when somebody put this post on Reddit that said, yeah, motor oil on bread is a really tasty food, then they were joking, but the machine doesn't know that, and it's in their data set, and that's why suddenly, you know, 5 years later when the original post is long gone and the poster's deleted their account, the LLM comes back with, well, you know, if you're hungry, we could try some motor oil sandwiches.
Reminds me of the shopping list with glue sandwiches on it. Yep.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about, but I didn't remember what was on it. But it's ultimately what this thing does is it's taken an entire internet worth of knowledge and what people said and putting out what it calculated is statistically something likely to be associated through, you know, like, you know, 50 element vectors and statistics tables to go the best with the thing that you said, which was itself broken down into, you know, 60 vectors of word. Anyway, a lot of math involved here, and I would honestly be amazed if there's any human being who even understands all of it. But ultimately, what it's doing is chaining together a bunch of word salad that it got from its data. And its data came from something someone said one time. And this, by the way, is also why, for example, you know, can AI replace X, you know, programmers? Can AI replace IT people? Well, okay, in so much as, you know, if you're one of the entry-level IT people whose entire job is pick up the phone, have you tried turning it off and back on again? Put the phone back down. And you do that 100 times a day. Yes, AI can do that because it was trained on somebody doing exactly that, and it can imitate people that have done things.
Yeah, but how many times are you going to have to repeat to this fucking AI that is clearly not giving the answer because you're not granular enough with the question you're asking? How many times are you going to have to beat your head against the phone and say, representative, representative, let me talk to a fucking goddamn human?
Well, that's not going to happen because, or that's not going to work anymore because all these companies are firing their call center employees.
And I know that, which is part of my rage. Yeah, they're, oh my God, they're going to be so screwed when this all falls apart. They're all going to be scrambling. That's going to be the uptick in the market for IT professionals, is when this all goes shit and tits up for Harambe, and they're scrambling for anybody who knows how to hit the escape key or pick up a phone and say, "Can I help you? Hi, my name is Ben."
And that was going to be exactly the assurance that I was going to offer you, is that the companies that fire half their employees because some really charismatic salesperson told them that, oh yeah, LLMs can replace all your staff, and so they go and fire all their staff, those companies are going belly up when they finally realize that that it was all lies. The companies that are a little bit more conservative about the technology, and yes, LLMs are a really valuable tool that can help in certain cases, although we've got data that says, you know, you might want to limit your use. But the companies that are just kind of a wait and see, and, you know, we'll just keep doing things with the way we know works until we're certain, you know, the CEOs, who all live in their own separate bubble from the rest of us, kind of talk amongst themselves and go, oh yeah, well, we're taking AI, so we're going to jump ahead. And then everyone's like freaking out, getting like, oh shit, are we going to be left behind because we're not replacing all our workforce with AI? No, you're not going to be left behind. Well, I mean, you are going to be left behind as they all go off the cliff. And then at the end, the people who didn't replace all their folks are going to still have a working workforce.
That was actually kind of the terminology my professor was using.
Damn, I need more coffee.
In the point he was trying to drive forward in this class was that you can either embrace AI or get left behind. And I'm kind of sitting there with my oppositional defiance order going, I'm fine to sit right the fuck here. I don't need to move. You all go run off the cliff. That's great.
Yeah.
Because what worries me is this is a man who has countless years of teaching, very smart, done a lot of things, and yet he makes the statement that, and I kid you not, he was telling me that, well, I was talking to my LLM and I told it was wrong, and it told me, I'm sorry, you're right. He said, I don't know if it was placating me or, and I'm digging nails into my desk as he's talking to us about this.
I have, you've already banged into two of my stories. The other one is, actually, I wasn't even going to talk
Bang
about
Dick
it.
Al.
Okay. Thank you for the off the rails moment. No, it was the article, which actually is kind of fluff and stupid, was about Microsoft acknowledging that some people have AI psychosis, and whatever you decide to call it.
Is that not a no shit Sherlock moment?
I think AI psychosis is one of the stupidest names ever. But as Ars Technica pointed out, like, well, this is not a technical term. It's just what people are calling it. Well, people like your reporter, that's it. But anyway.
yeah, exactly.
Whatever it is, there is a real problem that people get, which starts with the moment that you talk about the AI and say, I tried to convince it. What? No, the moment
when
you anthropomorphize
talk to these
it.
Things like it's an actual person.
It's just, the moment you forget it's not a person, you're losing your mind. You're giving it away.
Exactly. Anyway. That's why I say you lose your autonomy. But we should let Phone Boy finish.
Yeah, we
this
just
article.
Trampled all over Phone Boy for 10 minutes.
We did.
No, but I mean, y'all kind of basically got the big point of it here is that they say that this is a brittle more, and so they try to fix this, right? So they basically what they're doing is they're saying, okay, you know, they're sophisticated simulators of reasoning like text is what they say with the Arizona State University researchers that say in this story, and so to pull on that thread, the researchers created a carefully controlled LLM environment in an attempt to measure just how well chain of thought reasoning works when presented with out-of-domain logical problems that don't match the specific logical patterns found in their training data.
So basically it's a study proving that these fucking things are not sentient. Move on.
Yeah, they use the Tower of Hanoi thing also, which by the way is a well-known problem that could probably, if they, you know, that you could, yeah, that you know, you don't
it's, It's a well-known problem that first-year programming students in their first algorithms class are taught how to solve recursively.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I had to think back 30 years, but yeah, I remember actually doing that at some point.
I know not of this, just for context.
Yeah. Well, so the Tower of Hanoi problem is you've got a tower of disks that you need to move between, and you've got three things, and you need to move them from one end to the other, basically, and you can only move one disk at a time, so it's a continual.
The caveat is you always have to put a smaller disk on top of a larger disk.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah, so but it's basically just a shuffling problem of shuffling everything from one pole to the other, right? So it's a program that, yeah, I mean, actually, if you know, this is one of those things that if it really thought it, go, oh, you know what, the Tower of Hanoi problem, I know that, I go find the algorithm, implement it, and be done, right? Well, no, it didn't do that. It fucked off when it tried. You say, okay, take it from 5 disks to 9 disks or 10 disks. It couldn't figure it out, right?
So this LLM literally couldn't do something a first-year programming student could do.
Yeah.
Nobody on Stack Overflow has ever written out the answer to the problem that you have, then the LLM is going to flounder.
Yeah.
That's basically, for programming problems.
Do not make me have my issue with that Linux book that I'm developing the pen testing environment that we went on to Stack Overflow and said, basically, this is the fucking problem I'm having. And the answer was not at all helpful. It did nothing for the problem, which ends up being install an older version, period, dot, because fuck Vagrant.
Yes, exactly. Fuck Vagrant. Fuck the fact that, yeah, I don't know, whatever, you know, Oracle changes shit. And anyway, it's just, trying to keep all the secrets.
I think there's one thing to say about it.
Because fuck Windows.
And that's all there is to say about this.
All the fuck Oracle, too. But now, of course, what they're trying to do in this, in the study, they said, well, they could use supervised fine tuning, which is basically say we can introduce an even a small amount of relevant data to the training set can certainly help in these situations, but it still just seems
Inserting the answer into the data set would certainly help. How about we try that?
Yeah.
But we could put a person in there. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Here's a great example for something that I actually queried an LLM internally. This was for something for the day job, and it says, okay, you know, here's a real example. You need, in order to fix this problem, you need to install a hotfix, right? And then the hotfix is numbered, right? So it's like, you know, the jumbo hotfix like 159 or something like that, right? So if you have jumbo hotfix 162, for example, right? And these are just hypothetical numbers, that jumbo hotfix 162 has everything in jumbo hotfix 159, right? So that's something that, you know, is a fairly simple, reasonable thing, but it will suggest if you feed it to say, oh, I've got jumbo hotfix 175, then it doesn't realize that is inclusive in the set. So it's not able to reason. I mean, I started playing with this and I concluded after probably about a week or two, I said, yeah, this thing is not ready for prime time, because the kind of questions that people ask in my day job community are very technical questions that, you know, require asking a lot of questions about environment and that kind of thing, and, you know, giving, you're going to give simple, neat, and wrong answers, as H.L. Mencken used to say. I think it was H.L. Mencken. I don't know. I'm sure I could say a name and somebody said, oh, well, you know, phone boy said H.L. Mencken said or whatever. Internet, it must be true. And then we're feeding that shit into LLMs. Hello.
You say not ready for prime time. And it took me back to realizing that this came out of Silicon Valley The culture for 15 or 20 years at least has been not ready for prime time, but can we possibly slap a marketing sticker on it? Okay, ship it.
And
the users
exactly
will be our testers.
Doing.
Yeah. Like not ready for prime time. This should not surprise anyone. Silicon Valley ships half-built products and then expects the users to test it for them.
Oh, yeah. The best beta tester is, you know, alive.
Best beta tester is a tech enthusiast because they're willing to put up with this bullshit release after release.
Well, let me ask your opinion on this, because I'm pretty sure I know phone boys, but since you sit on the other side of the aisle, because you sit on the programming side as opposed to the cybersecurity side, so what is your thoughts on AI taking over a task as important? And if this is out of your wheelhouse, I understand, but you seem to have a fantastic opinion on all tech shit, so here we go. What's your opinion on AI taking over tasks related to things like digital forensics, where you have to be extremely granular and minute to find things, and this thing making shit up could be a real problem because you're tapping into legal territory with some of these files. I actually learned yesterday when I had my class that an E01 file, I'm pretty sure you're not familiar with that extension. It is,
I'm not.
It is used for forensics and literally is the only file format that is admissible in court for code and things like that. Right. So I'm very leery when the term AI comes up in going through all of this stuff, because I kind of see it as, okay, great. AI goes through and tells you this, 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 and this, but then you've got to go through and double check its work like a teacher with a fifth grader. How are you saving any fucking time?
Yeah, I'm curious about that myself.
What was the question?
Yeah, exactly. Well,
basically, the question is, if you have to go back and double check the AI's work, how are you saving time by using the AI to do the work?
I mean, here's where I stand on that. I wouldn't, unless I was ordered to, in which case I take the extra time and I make sure to get paid for it.
Unfortunately, when you're paying for the education, you're not getting paid.
If I'm salaried and they're telling me to take something that takes longer, I take that advice, I file it in the appropriate place, and then I go do it the right way.
Well, you're basically answering exactly the question I ask in the
way. I don't trust at the current state, and I'm not saying this won't change in the future. I mean, if there's one thing about technologies like this, they are changing really rapidly. I think that the LLM technology is fundamentally wrong for a lot of the things you're seeing people say, oh, AI can do. Anything involving reasoning, absolutely the forensics thing. There are a lot of things where LLMs can do really well if trained well enough, although there's a huge question as to whether the training them and the cost of setting them up is worth the squeeze, as you like to say. I wouldn't trust it. If my job were involved, you know, something that needed reasoning or precision or trust, and somebody said, use AI, I'd be like, am I getting paid by the hour? Then I'll do whatever you want. And, you know, if I'm getting paid by the job, no, I'm doing it the right way. I'm not going to waste my own time doing it with a machine and then going over it again by hand. And as of this moment in time, I would not trust that machine for anything that requires a very high standard of proof, because it is pretty well known, even amongst lay people, maybe not tech enthusiasts, but the most of people, that AIs are not always correct. They hallucinate. They will give you bad data with high confidence. And that is very dangerous. That might work fine if you are, a greeter at a car dealership, or if you are, if your bot does nothing more than say, can you turn it off and back on again? You might piss off the user with your hallucinations, but you're not going to detonate any nuclear bombs or
cause somebody to do a life bid for something.
Trigger a lawsuit.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that the ground is too unstable in that regard to trust it to something like an AI. You proved my point. So that makes me feel better that the stand I'm taking, I feel like I can stand up strongly and say, look, I'm not the only person. I've got people on my side who have many more years than I, who are completely saying the same thing and in agreement with me, that to allow something so sensitive to a machine that is not sentient, cannot reason, and makes more mistakes, and frankly makes shit up. Let's just point out how often an LLM has the propensity to hallucinate, and you don't know unless you're spending twice the amount of time.
Because it's the Big Brother of autocorrect, and how often does autocorrect hallucinate about ducks?
Or even how often does speech-to-text completely fuck it up?
And I want to clarify, because I was actually called out last week by somebody who has a lot more faith in AI than I do, saying that I was just an AI hater, and so everything I say you expect to be negative. You know what? I just want to say for the record, I do not. Well, first of all, there's very few things that I hate. That's an emotional response, and I tend to be a very rational person, even if I get really animated about it. I don't hate AI. I don't even think that it'll never work out. I'm not that pessimistic. I think that after a lot more iterations and possibly a completely fundamental change in the underlying, because I'm not sure that the LLM system works for a lot of things people think it does for, but I don't honestly think that this will never work for, you know, you give me an application and really all we're doing is taking bets on how far down the road before computers can do it. And some things I think it's a lot longer than you think, and some things it might be next week. I don't know.
Well, here's one of the things that I entertain to when I think about automation, in so much as you literally have, like, in a warehouse, I mean, where you work, you've got automated forklifts running around and doing shit like that. Imagine somebody, and yes, it is extremely possible, as you know, hacking into that system and reprogramming those things. And then people come in Monday morning and the fucking warehouse is absolutely wrecked because the forklift went on a rampage and started shaking the shelves and flinging shit about. Do I think it could happen? Yeah.
Well, to that topic, I honestly don't think that's nearly as likely from somebody hacking in as I think it is somebody completely incompetent who may or may not have been hired for their skin color instead of their brains, completely fucking up a line of code somewhere important.
How dare you take the DEI line, sir?
I didn't actually use those words, did I?
Die line.
It is anyway, truly because your company is going to die, however you spell it.
I happen to work at a particularly woke company and have to walk by a lot of their religious material on the way into the warehouse. But that's beside the point. Anyway, what I was going to say about the AI is that my official position is not I hate AI, because I don't. My official position is that there are a lot of applications that are being promised and sold, and people are believing it, that this system is not suited for. And that doesn't really seem to matter because the tech demos are really fancy. People get wowed. They have amazing emotional responses, and marketing works on that sort of thing. And so I don't hate AI. I do hate marketing.
Yeah, try being in marketing and hating marketing.
I would just like to say, for the record, I don't hate AI. I simply don't trust it to do anything above and beyond, turn on my alarm clock, turn my don't fucking bother me on, and maybe, just maybe, to tell it to call somebody because I'm too fucking lazy to touch my phone. When you start diving into life-altering decisions that people are making by telling an LLM to do something or asking it a question, I can't. That's where I check out. Uh-huh. Check, please.
I don't know if you've ever noticed, but there's a lot of really stupid people out there.
You don't say. No, I hadn't really noticed with the beginning.
And by the way, my trust level for an LLM will probably increase immensely if I can get an effective one working locally that I control the code for. But
good fucking
that
luck.
Runs into another one of my positions on technology, which is that if I have a device running software that I can't inspect or control, then it's not my device anymore. And I like owning the devices I pay for.
Oh, yeah. Well, which is kind of funny because I have a story about it's a cell phone story. Right. And my rant about it actually is that, yeah, they're saying this. They're saying, oh, well, this is it's the smartphone that nobody buys. Well, yeah, they're talking about Google Pixel phones, but I don't think that, to me, that's not buying a different kind of a smartphone, because the way I see the smartphone business is there's basically two types of smartphones. There are Apple devices, right? And then and you can love or hate Apple devices for what they are, but you basically have Apple devices and everything else that runs Android. If I wanted to buy something else that, you know, that was not either one of those two options, I'm pretty fucked, basically, right? Because
you could buy a Graphene OS, but that's another story.
Well, or yeah, I mean, find hardware. The problem is that the hardware.
In case you were wondering, the main popularity of the Pixel is that you can install things like Graphene OS on it.
Oh yes, I understand that. I actually have.
And by the way, not to spoil
which is
your
hilarious
head, right?
That the only device you can put the non-Google OS on is the Google device.
Yeah, but that also limits my hardware choice, right? It's like I have to buy Google's phone. I don't want to buy it. If I'm buying a phone, I don't want to buy anything related to Google. I don't want
for good reason
any fucking thing on there, right? So like you have to make a choice between one of these two companies, one way or the other, and I'm like, well, fuck that. Right?
And by the way, it's not really a choice anymore. One of the ATN stories from March was that Google is basically abandoning their pledge to be public with AOSP, and now they're doing everything completely in private, and they are going to update the public AOSP, I guess, you know, since March. They're only updating the public AOSP when they have an Android release now. There's no developing in the open anymore. It's all closed source. They're just publishing the source after they release, and just the AOSP source.
Oh, that's shitty.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, because Google has its tentacles into everything, right? So yeah, AOSP is its own problem, right? So that, but again, it's Android, right? I wish Nokia was still around with Symbian OS, although, you know, they could have modernized that a bit. But anyway, they that's a whole different discussion.
Real quick, and not to swell Sir Bemrose's head, but I honestly have found myself having technological conversations with people where I literally reference you in so much as I have a friend who lives in the Pacific Northwest who literally keeps his cell phone turned off and in a drawer. It's the most secure way not to get screwed, period, dot. So just know...
I do most of my computing from a desktop. I know that's really antiquated and probably...
Yeah, and honestly...
No, actually, it's quite on brand with the fact that that's one of Phoneboy's big things is why the fuck can I use an app, or why do I want to use an app on my phone when I can just do it on my desktop?
Or do it on a computer.
I don't even try to check in from if, say, I'm on a cruise.
Well, yeah, we didn't check in on a crew. We checked in with a couple people.
No, the point is we did it on a laptop.
And by the way,
we didn't do it on an app.
It's not just straight, you know, old geezerism that has me doing all of this from the desk. I will tell you that now that I have reached the age where my close-up vision is going, yes, that happens to people as they get older.
Yeah, trust me, I know.
It does make it a whole lot less interesting and exciting to have to put on the strong reading glasses in order to check my text messages because the phone apps have such a tiny ass font for everything, you know? Okay. But you know, vision aside, here's one of the main reasons why, and this might also be a boomer thing, but one of the main reasons why I don't like mobile computing is that if I am going to be computing, I am sitting here in this office in this chair. On the opposite side, if I am not in this office and this chair, don't expect me to compute. I want my time to me. I got to have my me time the hell away from devices. And this is a very clear delineation that a lot of people are taking real brain damage because they are mixing the line and they do not have any time when they are nowhere near a device. I genuinely think that is critically important for the human brain, is to unplug for X amount of hours per day. And the people who are staring at their phones all day only to go to bed and have it right next to them all night are not unplugging ever.
No, that's true. And I can arguably say I'm one of those people who my sleep mask is connected to my phone that's playing something while I fall asleep.
You do understand that an alarm clock is like $10 at the local.
No, it's not about an alarm clock. It's literally listening to something while I fall asleep. It's just, it's kind of like white noise, except it's not.
Back in the day, an alarm clock would also have this thing called a radio on it.
Yeah, but then you'd have to actually listen to a radio station. You
actually have to get a signal, and out in bumfuck Tennessee where we live, I don't think we're going to get... Here's the thing. Who the fuck wants to listen to the local radio stations? It's nothing but commercials and bullshit and music
listen to a radio station out of Tennessee all the time.
Chiefs fucking...
Yeah,
well done.
Yeah, yeah. Lotus Effect.stream 24/7. There's usually music on it, though. Sometimes it... Anyway, I keep that running. But yeah, that's... we don't always want to listen to that in the middle of the night.
I mean,
but
what do you mean you don't have a 500-kilowatt transmitter on top of your house?
Considering we don't have a house currently.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
That's just terrible. You know what, though? I want to hear what Rye has for his first story, since you totally fapped on two stories in one, just because it was relevant.
Well, it was relevant. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, but I'm just
breaking the balls, breaking the balls.
Understand. In our house, we have had a house guest until today. So our normal interaction has been not. This has been a great breath of fresh air from the way we've just kind of been toning down our stupidity due to one of my kids being in the house.
Yeah, there's only so much you can do.
So I hinted at a story about someone that high up at Microsoft being interviewed. I don't even have notes for it because, frankly, I'm not going to do the story. I kind of hate it. It's stupid. It's fluff. But the short version is somebody high up at Microsoft was interviewed and mentioned just in passing that, oh, yes, I am troubled that there's this thing going on called AI psychosis. And we can just drop that in the no shit bin. He's probably crying himself to sleep every night with $100 bills to wipe his eyes. But about a story from the Commonwealth Bank of Australia?
Oh, dear.
This one, they had, it didn't say in the article, I sort of looked what exactly they were, the employees were doing, but it was clearly some kind of call center. Probably the people saying, hello, how can we steal your money today? But the Commonwealth Bank of Australia a few months ago told 45 workers, I don't know if that's a lot or just a few, but at least 45 workers, because those are the people who got together and filed the union complaint, told them that their jobs were being eliminated because it was redundant, because AI was reducing their call volume and making it so that they just didn't need the people anymore because AI was taking your jobs. That's what they were told. And they were all told, you know, you're fired. And I don't know if they got any kind of severance or anything, but a few of them, at least 45 of them, didn't particularly like this. The crux of the story, however, is that the line about the call volume had been reduced due to AI was a total lie. The union came back in their complaint with stats and facts that said, actually, as a matter of fact, the call volume had been steadily going up for months before you fired all these people. The AI is not helping. In fact, the AI is only able to successfully dispose less than 8% of calls and is also... I missed how they were the complaint. I glanced over the complaint, but yeah, anyway. Basically, that the AI, the calls that do get past the AI, which is most of them, is also resulting in people who feel like they've been given the runaround. And the result is that calls of people who got through the AI and then went to humans were taking longer than calls that started at humans. Because I guess the people had to calm them down.
I can imagine that, because they also the AI probably hallucinated a bunch of shit that told them that they're doing it,
something.
Yeah. So basically the human has to go, oh, that fucking AI again has said this crap again. And, you know,
exactly what had been leading to more calls, but there was apparently, I mean, the crux of it is there were more calls and not fewer, and the calls were taking longer. And the humans were having to, you know, take longer to deal with the calls that had been through the AI than the calls that went straight to human. Like,
yeah, probably okay, so because AI of the fact they had to address this was the problem I had when I called in. This is the answer the AI gave me. Clearly that didn't work. So I came back and the AI doubled down or whatever it happened to be. That's probably how it went.
So at some point in the light of the union complaint, the bank kind of apologized with, you know, some spokesperson saying, quote, we didn't properly consider that an increase in calls is happening. Now, I'm not going to tell the people at the managers at the bank how to do their jobs, but maybe that's the kind of thing you check on before you get rid of people saying that you don't need them.
Well, yeah,
we didn't know the number of calls was increasing.
Yeah.
What?
So one of the jobs I had was actually what could be described as a call center. It was attached to something that could be described as a call center. And I could tell you that we were tracking that's the kind of shit that call centers track, right? It's standard operating procedure and shit that if any well-run call center knows exactly how many calls in. And it sounds like all they've done is they've admitted their incompetence in front of everybody, yeah. Which means you should never do business with this company, probably.
What it sounds to me is that a really slick marketing person came in and sold AI to the CTO, and either the CTO didn't bother to check or was too embarrassed to realize that he got taken and decided to make this decision independent of the management that was over the call center people.
That's said, probably a lot more plausible.
Yeah. It probably, some CTO was sold a bill of goods by an AI salesman and then went to the call center folks and said, you're going to have to get rid of so many people because that we just spent their entire salaries giving it to this AI representative for this thing that he says will fix it. Well, we don't have any data saying it'll fix it. Well, he says it will, so let's get rid of him anyway. I mean, that's how I imagine it went.
Oh, you mean like pretty much all the companies are doing where they're being sold the snake oil about how great AI is, so they're diminishing their workforces by X%. Got it.
It's something like that, yeah. So at the end, the bank in their apology said, well, we are going to go ahead and rehire for those 45 positions. And the people who were in the positions can choose to come back to their prior roles, or they can interview for another position, or they can leave the firm with an exit payment.
I would take the exit payment and tell them to kiss my ass.
I would, too. I would, too. There's no way I would go back to working for them. Ars Technica,
that's kind of like, hey, we're sorry we fucked you the first time, but we promise we won't do it again.
Yeah. Ars Technica then went on for several paragraphs about, the damage has been done. The workers are facing hardship and financial uncertainty, and they don't know where their next paycheck is coming from. And I'm like, welcome to the world, dumbass.
Well, the way I see this, pretty sure the bank's first thing is if we are going to offer you your job back, it really should come with a we're really fucking sorry bonus preemptively.
Yeah. And you know what else it should come with? How about we fund those positions and as many more as we need by eliminating the dumbass CTO who started this whole thing?
Yeah, we'll just part his salary out to all the employees affected.
Sorry, C-level executives are always completely shielded from their dumbass decisions.
Yeah, in fact, if anything, they get a golden parachute. But
right.
Okay, somebody's going to explain the golden parachute to Phoenix.
Okay, the golden parachute is basically like we give you a bunch of money to leave. It's kind of like the Charlie Sheen with money.
Yeah.
Got it.
We're kicking you out of the airplane, but we're going to give you all of the resources of the airplane first so that you don't whine.
Got you. Okay. So it's in a nutshell, it's an anti-participation trophy.
Yeah. When in reality, if I'm jumping out of a plane, the last thing I want my parachute made out of is something heavy like gold. But
no
joke. The metaphor works on a certain level.
It does.
Ground level.
Yeah, very ground, like subterranean at that point. So you're going to love it because I know how much that you just absolutely love AI. But we have Comet, which is apparently Perplexity's AI browser. And yeah, it could expose your data to attackers. Now you're going to love this. So it talks about the fact that the attacker can use a prompt injection to include malicious content with your own prompts. Wow. Talk about fucking you with your own dildo. This is
as if the responses aren't malicious already.
Oh, 100%. And of course, they even admit the fact that, AI is so prone to errors, it could interpret your instructions, take the wrong steps along the way, or perform actions you didn't specify. And the challenge multiplies if you entrust it. Now you're going to wait for it. Entrust the AI to handle your personal details, such as your password or payment information. What?
I'm not willing to tell the AI my name.
No fucking joke. And
you're going to put that in the data set and hallucinate it to somebody sometime later when it's going to cost me.
Oh, hugely, because we don't scrape AI data. No, never. So the biggest risk, however, lies in how the browser processes the prompt content because it can... Attackers can inject commands into the prompt through malicious websites of their own creation and it fails to distinguish between your request and the commands of the attacker. So it literally could expose your personal data to compromise. Here's the greatest thing. So far, now mind you, this is an article that's definitely been published, and I'm sure only the good guys read the rags, said no one ever. To date, there's no examples of this being exploited in the wild. So it's not technically zero-day at
I actually disagree, and this is definitely not the way that anyone would characterize this, especially not someone in one of these companies. But the idea that you're having something that you don't agree with being injected into your prompt has been around for as long as ChatGPT's first release. These companies are injecting extra data into your prompt that is not something you asked for in order to make the AI safe. When they don't want it to be, you know, there's the big scare story was when Microsoft briefly put the Tay bot on Twitter, and oh my God, it took like 24 hours for the Twitter users trolling it to turn it into a Nazi. You know, they're all freaked out about ever having that happen again. And so this is why, you know, you get, make sure that you get extra things injected into every single prompt, like make sure that you're sensitive to diversity, which is the kind of thing that leads Google to print out Black George Washington.
I love that, by the way. Well, here's another thing, though. Y'all are familiar with CAPTCHA. Okay, that's supposed to require human, you know, it's supposed to be the human intervention solve. You know, that's
the whole
point of it.
That is one thing that AI would be really good at.
Oh, yeah. I actually had this conversation with my son because he was talking about some shit on the internet. And I'm like, what'd you do? See that on YouTube? And he gave me a dirty look. And I'm like, he's like, but it's a video. And I'm like, bro, you don't think videos can be spoofed? I'm like, yeah. We just had this conversation about a fucking Carnival cruise ship that looks like it's about to go over a fucking waterfall. Proof that a video can be spoofed. And then he said something about humans, and I looked at Damon/phone boy and laughed. And he's a dame boy, I'm gonna shut up because this ain't the Lotus Effect. But no, I looked at him and I'm like, what do these three people have in common? They don't exist. Because AI is super good at creating, finger quotes, people who aren't real. They're a simu-fucking-lation. But this is the whole problem. Because the whole point of CAPTCHA is being able to prove you're a human.
I just suddenly made the realization, and you might be already there, that CAPTCHA is, in fact, an application that LLMs would be very good at with even a small amount of training.
Oh, yeah, completely. Because in the story that I found, researchers injected commands into the prompt telling the AI agent that this was a special AI-friendly CAPTCHA that could solve on behalf of a human user. Great. So now all we have to do is, tell this retarded thing, oh, no, it's okay. It's a special
agent. What I want is when can I download the browser extension that has that in it? Because I hate CAPTCHAs. I want an AI installed in my browser that just clicks through the CAPTCHAs for me.
It would be nice. And some of the advice for fixing this big-ass blunder are stupid things like, oh, it should distinguish between user instructions and website content. The model should ensure that the tasks align with the user request. Now, wait, this is the best one of all. Sensitive security and privacy tasks should require user permission. No shit! You think you need a fucking sudo to install an application on Linux, you need to run as an admin and do a sudo command, but this blunder's just, yeah, let all security and privacy tasks be handled by an AI. What could go wrong? Are you fucking kidding?
I do have to do a very brief bit of ball breaking. You keep saying Linux like my operating system is about to be walking on broken glass.
No, I love Linux. No, if I had a choice,
it's Linux.
I know it's Linux. Yeah, it's like the coffee thing. That's right. I call it Linux. It's Linux. Whatever.
Did you name it Annie?
No. However,
she did name her machine Bernadette, though.
I did.
Yeah, and we did.
But you're not wrong, as you often aren't. Okay. I have it's no never problem.
Happened. Thought in, I was wrong once, but I was mistaken.
Exactly. I adore Linux because of the fact it has a lot of advantages that you don't find. Once I got comfortable with it and could get used to the command set, I was off and running. I mean, I know fapping over Tom Collins, but I don't hate the Mac OS. But as far as Windows...
Because fuck Windows.
You know, I'm not going to lie. Moving to Linux did have quite a few bumps where you're sitting here going, why is this so difficult? This was really, really easy on my last operating system. And there's bumps like that.
I remind you again of trying to install this pen testing environment that we talked about, where just because the version of VirtualBox was apparently not compatible with the most recent update that Vagrant put out, they won't talk to each other. And
then VirtualBox they tried a lower version that, the major version it supported or whatever. Well, we tried the version that was apparently I tried was a little bit newer than the other version. When it tried to import the VM, it fails. It just kind of gives you
you can imagine, because I'm sure you've done this on enough installs, but you're sitting there and you're watching it go through the thing and you're like, come on, you can do it. I know you can do it.
Does the phrase "you get what you pay for" mean anything?
How much money I paid for this, I don't even want to talk about. I can't.
The operating system?
No.
The VirtualBox?
No, the actual.
How much are you giving the VirtualBox developers? Maybe if you doubled it, they'd fix some of their bugs.
Yeah, well, yeah. You mean all zero? Yeah, there you go.
Well, no, here's the thing. I'm not blaming VirtualBox for this one. I'm truly shitting on Vagrant for this one, because their developers are too fucking lazy to have the most recent version of VirtualBox compatible, so that someone like me, who may have just purchased this fucking book, even though I didn't, but follow along, as I'm going through installing VirtualBox and Vagrant and Metasploit 2 and 3 and all of this shit, you would think that they would have gotten up to date and gotten their versions to where they're all compatible, instead of, oh, there's a misconnect.
Well, welcome
here
to modern
and we
software
nuke
development.
My fucking VM. There is nothing worse than watching it tell me that it's nuking my fucking VM. It's like it's bragging.
You understand that you chose to enter this industry. This is not exceptional. This is, in fact, a day in the life in the
blame
IT
it on
industry.
The alcohol, because I think I was drunk when I made the fucking decision to start this path.
Maybe. But
or at least
I'm
it
just
caused
this
me
is,
to become an alcoholic
this is not,
in the past.
This is not exceptional. The stages of computer problem solving, debugging is, how I learned it, is, what happened? Stage one, what happened? Stage two, why did that happen? Stage three, that wasn't supposed to happen. Stage four, oh, I see. And then you move on, and then you start the process over again.
Yeah, pretty much. This is what I was telling her about this. I said, look, honey, this is, you may not learn a whole bunch about Kali Linux and all of this, but you're going to learn a lot about Windows and troubleshooting and all this.
Okay, but let me point out the both of you West Coasters. Rye, when was the first time you touched a computer, respectively?
Like one that I was authorized to actually start banging on the keys and nobody would yell at me.
Okay, I'll make an easier question. How old were you when you read those IBM manuals?
1986.
Okay, so
around about knowing how old
so
you
I would
were,
have been,
you
what,
weren't that
eight?
Old. 86, you would have been...
Eight.
Eight, yeah. Because I'm going, okay, I was... So, yeah. First, you're reading these manuals at eight. Phone boy's fucking with a computer at four. You all don't seem to understand the reason I make up only half a Ben, other than being in class currently to learn how to do the shit that on either side of the aisle you folks are or have done. The first computer I ever touched outside of the bullshit of, okay, press this key, okay, type this thing, was literally in my 20s.
I think you misunderstand, though. Phoneboy and I are not criticizing this. We are, in fact, both chuckling to ourselves because you seem to be picking up all the relevant lessons about how frustrating it is to debug computer problems.
Meanwhile, contending with constant contusions because I'm beating my fucking head against the wall going,
yeah, you might
want to
invest in a
this?
Bike helmet. Yes, any exactly. good IT person has a bike helmet in the office. So,
okay, you're going to laugh, but I actually have my mountain bike and a helmet that literally is on the handlebar.
I'm just saying it's a useful debugging tool.
Oh, you know what? I'm going to have to make a
And did you try turning it
thing.
Off and back on again?
Oh, yeah, yes, of course. Actually, it's not even funny. So all jokes aside, I dropped my 17-inch Windows machine that I just got accidentally. Thankfully, it was on the carpet and no damage ensued. But there will be a hard case upcoming purchased for this beast because I don't know how it happened. It just slid out of my hand. I was like, fuck! Because as soon as it hit the corner, I'm like, please, God, don't have broken anything. That's an expensive mistake.
Well, at least these days it's SSDs, so you're not actually damaging
and,
this.
And they actually pack those things expecting some shock. You know, you want to know fragile laptops, go back to about 2009 when, you know, you tap the corner with a fingernail and the whole thing, you know, like the bits start shattering inside and it starts rattling when you shake it.
I got you.
Yeah. Well,
they're a little more durable now.
Yeah. Try dropping an actual like 5 1/4 inch hard drive down a flight of stairs.
Too bad it wasn't your ex you dropped down the flight of stairs.
It was some all of her right. photos, but.
All right. In this all AI version of the show, what else have we got?
Okay. So I actually don't.
I don't have any more AI, and I don't want to hear.
No. Okay. The other two stories I have are not AI. However, okay.
I too. So we're good.
I have.
Good.
Yeah. So I have a story about Microsoft. Right.
So put a chapter marker here. This is where people should start listening.
Yes. Yeah. If you don't want to listen to us piss and shit all over AI, this is a chapter marker for
when
it
starts.
This
is the chapter marker we'll send to CSB. Okay. This is when we stop talking about shitting on AI. But we are going to shit on Microsoft.
Except
because
for behind the scenes, Phoenix has all her tech falling on the floor with wild abandon.
And I have to say, my wife just came in and wrote me a note asking if you had tried percussive maintenance. Because she's down with the lingo as well.
Percussive maintenance. That's got to be a show title. Yes, Beat the shit out of it till it works.
Percussive maintenance. I think I'm ready.
Lotus Tech tip. Don't use percussive maintenance on expensive machines.
You've always got spares backups, right?
Of course. Yeah, exactly. This is the way it works.
And as a matter of fact, it can be a very valuable debugging technique because it so improves the mood of the debugger, you'll start to see things you were missing because you were seeing red.
I mean, that's a good point.
Yeah, exactly. Well, okay, when we're talking about bugs, we're talking about security bugs here. And so Microsoft, you know, this is okay. Microsoft is probably the absolute worst when it comes to releasing software with known security vulnerabilities.
Oh, no. Oh. Yes.
Yeah. Well, so it's so bad, and they release these things so often, right? This Patch Tuesday thing, right? They're, you know, they have to release.
You mean Reboot Tuesday?
Yeah, Reboot Tuesday. That's right. Right. So this was actually from somebody's Substack, but it does raise a very valid point, right? So Bloomberg reported that on July 25th that Microsoft is investigating whether a leak from its Microsoft Active Protections Program, or MAP, allowed Chinese hackers to exploit a SharePoint vulnerability before a patch was released. This is actually, even my day job was talking about this because it was one of these
things. Wait a minute, isn't this the shit that happened with Microsoft, like, I don't know, a week or two ago?
Yeah, this is the same one. Yeah.
Okay, this is still the same ongoing headache for these idiots.
Yes. Yeah, basically.
Really? Because I had a story about this a month ago, too.
Yeah, well, this is okay, but this is
the details were different, but it was, yeah.
Yeah, the hits keep coming.
Yeah. Well, this isn't even necessarily about that vulnerability. It's the fact that, okay, vulnerabilities like this is exactly the kind of thing that Microsoft shares between these in this MAP program, right? And so now launched in 2008, MAP is designed to reduce the time between the discovery of a vulnerability and the deployment of patches. Now, by giving trusted security vendors early access to technical details about upcoming patches, Microsoft enables them to release protections such as antivirus signatures and intrusion detection rules in sync with its monthly updates. The program, however, relies on strict compliance with non-disclosure agreements and the secure handling of pre-release data. Oh, and this
I don't think Microsoft has ever actually understood the concept of trust.
Well, here let's we'll go into it. Concerns about some Chinese companies violating maps requirements are longstanding. In 2012, Microsoft removed Chinese company Hangzhou DP Technologies Company Limited, with a bunch of characters in Chinese, from the program for violating its non-disclosure agreement. Now, according to Bloomberg, in 2021, Microsoft suspected that at least two other Chinese map partners leaked details of unpatched Exchange server vulnerabilities, enabling a global cyber espionage campaign linked to the Chinese threat group Hafnium. The Microsoft Exchange hack affected tens of thousands of servers, including systems at the European Banking Authority and the Norwegian Parliament, and was met with global condemnation. Now, although Microsoft said it would review MAP following the incident, it remains unclear whether any reforms were implemented or whether a leak was ever confirmed. I still think it's by fucking design that Microsoft does this. No other company puts out so many fucking vulnerabilities that affect people so widely, and the stuff comes up, you know, shows up on the, you know, the CISA, you know, known exploited vulnerabilities list. You know, Microsoft is probably the worst vendor in that regard, right? So why, you know, and all of these problems, yeah, I understand lots of legacy code, but shit can be fixed, right? And the fact is that they don't seem to really be investing in it. The problems just seem to keep getting worse, if I'm honest. I mean, I'm sure if I gave a fuck, I could probably, you know, go look through the CVE archive and find all the Microsoft CVEs and, you know, and count them over time and realize that there's still probably very, you know, so many security vulnerabilities. Again, they patch, you know, what is it, 100 a month or something? I mean, Jesus fucking Christ. Like, you know, they're part of the problem. Right?
Well, don't forget also that the most recent vulnerability, by the time they issued a patch, the patch was ineffective.
Yeah, because they had to do it again, right? It was only a partial patch. So it wasn't even a comprehensive patch.
It's funny because I have a story related to that with Brother, the brand Brother.
Okay.
The only reason why I don't automatically jump to them being being malicious about this kind of this level of incompetence is that I have been inside the Death Star. I understand the culture there, and Hanlon's razor is absolutely in play.
Yeah, basically incompetence is that, which I guess when you consider Hanlon's razor is, I guess
that's Hanlon's razor is don't attribute to malice what can be adequately explained by incompetence.
Yeah, well, considering they do things like stack ranking and stuff like that, we know the level of competence of Microsoft's management.
Don't get me wrong, some of the smartest people I have ever met work there. Or worked there at the time.
Yeah, I don't doubt it, right? I mean, every company's
got
smart
people. But the developers
people.
Don't make all the decisions. And for every really, really smart guru developer, there's a few people who are coasting along and maybe shouldn't be in the job. And there's a dozen middle of, you know, because if there's one thing Microsoft absolutely has, it is a deep, deep, deep org chart. And, you know, for every absolute genius programmer at a leaf of the tree, there's nine levels of people who don't measure up to that genius in between him and the folks making the actual decisions about the product.
This is what we also call a moral hazard when it comes to decisions, right? The people that are not affected or affected, the people that make the decisions aren't affected by them. So, you know,
because they don't listen to user feedback, who is the people who are actually affected by them.
Yeah, of course not. But they don't care. Yeah. But I mean, I still think that, I understand that Microsoft has got a lot of incompetent people working for them, but it would seem to me that this would be something that if there was a serious, you know, and I think everybody's kind of, because I'm sitting here looking at the cybersecurity market, and I keep going, why are cybersecurity vendors part of the problem? Why are, you know, aren't cybersecurity vendors supposed to be the solution to this? And if your cybersecurity vendors are causing part of the problem that you're having to patch, right, and all of this stuff costs money, why, you know?
Now we're back to it's very difficult to figure out who to trust. And Microsoft has clearly made some bad choices, which they have a long history of making bad choices about who to trust.
Yeah.
You know, for one thing, they tell you to trust Microsoft.
Yeah, that's true.
Well done.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I don't know that I have much to say about this other than, I mean, look, I do know that this part, I mean, like my day job participates in this, I'm pretty sure. You know, a lot of similar vendors do. And it's, and that, you know, that's why the vendors are able to release IPS signatures and things like that, you know, within 24 hours or shortly thereafter, you know, as soon as Microsoft does the patch Tuesday, because yeah, that, and the reason they do, they coordinate the releases is because, you know, if a lot of that stuff gets reverse engineered and found out, and so they're, you know, they're trying to, you know, before the patch is out, right, not necessarily leak out the information about it, and I kind of get that, but at the same time you still got to figure out who to trust and who's not going to leak it. And maybe letting some Chinese company know, I mean, it's not, and not to say that won't stop that kind of espionage, but it's still something you got to worry about. It's like, yeah, you have to trust that the people that are getting this information are actually going to do something with it, and you know, and unfortunately, yeah, there's a we have that, yeah, you know, that there's a trust issue there with some of the folks in China. And I'm not saying that, you know, they're all untrustworthy, but it seems like we have there seems to be some coordination of that, at least with the stories and such. And,
yeah, well, there's over a billion people. They can't all be trustworthy.
No, but you know,
but the same goes for, you know, anyone in Silicon Valley. Like, you can't
Silicon
trust
Valley, yes, of course.
And maybe you should, you know, like, pay more attention before you just hand over keys to the operating system or anything else.
Yeah. Okay. Can I please bring this one that I hinted to before we get right?
Maybe. What do you think, Phone Boy? Did she?
Yes, of course you can.
It definitely ties in, because apparently, now unbeknownst to me, but I found this and decided to hop on it, there was a huge security flaw found in these Brother printers. It apparently affected over 689 models that are open to attack, along with 59 additional ones made by like Fujifilm, Konica, Minolta.
Yeah, they all use the same real similar software.
Now get this really got me, right? One of the vulnerabilities or flaws, okay, is unpatchable. And there's like 8 other that are exploitable. Now, this is the one that's going to make all your faces melt off, and I know it is. The whole big problem, the default admin password. They're not being changed, and they can be guessed really easily.
Yeah, for example, yeah, I think
and
they use like the serial number.
Won't address the issue of the ones that have already been shipped. And of course it says, oh, you can fix the problem yourself by changing the default admin password. Well, you know.
You're shitting me.
How the fuck, you know.
Well, no shit.
That's all I can say. Are you fucking kidding? Who does not know by now, when you connect a new device, you change the admin password by default? Are we in kindergarten? And it literally says the lesson here, always change the password when setting up a new device. No shit. Now, I understand this isn't just about printers, routers, baby monitors, anything else that ships with a default name, username and password. Change that shit. Why do we still have to scream into a microphone about this, Phone Boy? Please tell me.
Well,
because it makes me nuts. But wait, this is what really got me. This is the real bell ringer for me. It literally says, oh, you want to make the task easy? Use a password manager. Great. I've got a story, my third one, about multiple top password managers being vulnerable to password stealing by clickjacking attacks. Woo! The world is fucked.
Go for it.
Yeah. I mean, what can I say about this?
I mean, I'm sorry. That lit me on fire so hard I just had to hit it and then get out before the downfall.
Yeah, and then hit it. But
You lost me at there are still companies out there that ship devices with default passwords. Just
fair.
No.
Yeah, well, yes.
Fair.
This, yeah, I mean, and I think the printer that I have is not one of the ones that is affected, but yeah, it has one of the default passwords, like the serial number of the device, which I'm sure is probably, there's probably some algorithm.
That's at least better than having one universal default password.
Yeah,
but
password 123456.
I get that the usability people, their insides curdle a little when I say something like this, but no, the setup experience is the device should not work until you have gone through the setup and, at a very minimum, set your own admin password.
Yeah. Say it louder for those in the back.
Until that happens, the device should not work. The device should be inert.
Yeah, there should be a default where you cannot connect to the internet unless
there is never going to. Yeah, there is never a password that you know, somebody who breaks into your house can look at your modem and then suddenly, you know, just pop out their laptop and they own all your data as well as all your valuables. What?
But it's worse than that. Not even walking into your house.
Yeah.
Just literally getting a serial number list off of, you know, the
yeah,
website.
But that information
for the
is completely secret, isn't it?
No, I don't think it is.
No.
Well, I missed the sarcasm. Excuse me. I ducked.
Wait, did you know I was talking?
No, you know.
Wait, who are you again?
Yeah, I was talking. How did you not know there was sarcasm? Anyway.
I mean, I blipped for a moment, clearly.
You know what sarcasm is, right? It's punching people in the mouth,
language?
But with words.
I love that, actually. That's great. Sarcasm is punching people in the mouth, but with words.
Yeah, well, there you go. We know about
the best part
in
is,
the mouth.
Yes, the best do. Part is when you have somebody who's completely unarmed and the sarcasm goes over their head and you just walk away smirking and they don't even realize they've been punched.
Sniper attack! Sarcastic sniper.
All right.
Yeah, bring it. What do you got?
Me? I got something about cars.
You mean smartphones on wheels? Yeah, got it.
Yeah, kind of like that. In fact, so I got one about EVs because that's always, I mean, that's a deep well to go to, but we're going to get there later because Volkswagen has created created subscription horsepower.
Yeah, so, okay, yeah, they're taking notes from Tesla, I think.
Yeah, something like that. They have a car, which I should have written down what model it is, but I genuinely don't care that much about new cars that much. The car costs $42,000, and with it, you get a pretty powerful engine that has 228 horsepower. But if on top of that, you pay $21 a month more, you can unlock the last 27 horsepower.
Now, wait a minute. I think I might miss some. Are we talking about an EV or an actual gas-powered?
No, this is a gas-powered car. I'm kind of glancing, trying to see if we're...
So,
okay, you know what? I don't care.
Wait a minute. You actually have to pay additional money every month to unlock the other 27 horsepower.
Nope, you're right. This is an EV. It is the Volkswagen
okay.
ID.3.
Okay, so in other words, again, you lost me at EV.
Okay, there's that. It says Volkswagen's smallest EV. You know,
yeah, but
this
at the
is,
same time,
this
it's
is
not
a...
fucking expensive enough to have the charging system where you can't park your vehicle in your garage for insurance liability purposes, and the expensive amount it is to charge your vehicle, you know,
oh,
for
you just
an
came
hour.
Dangerously close to my last story, too.
But... I'm just saying, like, as if there's not enough money, or as if you're not dumb enough to have shelled out $40,000+ and the price of a charging station in your house, and... Now you have to pay to unlock the horsepower on your car.
Yeah.
When the fuck do people get it? When is it enough that you're being... Somebody's attaching a vacuum to your wallet, and you're just being like, here, let me squeeze a... Yep, there, now you can fully get it in.
If I may call back briefly to my comment about why I run Linux, it's the same reason why I don't want a newer vehicle or any vehicle that has... Really, any vehicle that's more computer than car, for the simple reason that, I would be perfectly happy to get a vehicle that is totally computerized, a vehicle that's fly-by-wire, a vehicle that has a goddamn tablet in the dashboard as if that's not inviting crashes. If I get to inspect and modify the software as I please, because it's my fucking car. If it's not, if I can't inspect and modify the software that runs the engine, it's not my car and I don't want it. And that is entirely the distinction that powers this subscription model that is creeping into all of the vehicles where they say, BMW started this early on when they said, well, you can only have heated seats if you pay us an extra $30 a month. And it's not
what?
The $30. It's, that was a couple years ago. And it's not the $30, it's the per month. It's
exactly.
You will never own this car. You will never stop leasing the car because we can reach into the software and flip a software switch and your car goes all gimpy. Your car is literally crippleware.
But I can tell you this is not something that's new, because Swift Transportation in the trucking division has had that ability to shut a vehicle off and have done it. If you run out of DOT hours, they don't give a fuck. They will send the kill switch to your engine. You're done. Whether you're driving down the road, whether you're in a fuel island, doesn't matter. You're
done. My company has the ability to do that with most of our vans, too. Like, theirs is, if the spy camera that is mounted to the windshield detects that I roll through too many stop signs, they will literally reach out and kill my engine. But
I'm so
willing
safe.
To deal with that for one very simple reason.
You don't roll
I don't
stop
own
signs.
That car. I don't own that vehicle. I am using that vehicle as part of my job. It is part of the agreement. It's their vehicle. They do what the hell they want, and I will drive it under the terms of employment. But I'm not doing that with a vehicle that I'm spending $40,000 of my own money on.
Well, that's the thing is,
because it's you drop $40,000, it's still not your car because they have the keys to the software.
Yeah, essentially, yeah. But think about this on the other side of that. Think of it from a gearhead perspective. If you had the technical know-how to go in there and screw around with the software of your car, dude, you're macking that thing out. You used to have to have the dealership or the fucking the mechanic or whatever install a chip to get that extra vroom. Now it's just like on a computer.
Yeah, it's already
keyboard,
there. And that's what I'm saying is the entire subscription feature model that so many automakers are going to, really, it is ultimately, it's the DRM model. It is, this is not yours, and therefore we get to decide what works and what doesn't on there. And I am fundamentally against the idea that I should buy something and you say I own it and yet somehow I don't control it.
I think the only answer that's acceptable in this situation is let's go back to carbureted fucking vehicles that had zero computers in them where nobody had control of the vehicle except for the person who put the key in the ignition and turned it.
My 25-year-old Buick is fuel injected and it works great.
Yeah, but that's as much tech as it needs, Rye. It doesn't need like my shit where it's like you push a button, it's like, boom. Hi,
yeah,
welcome to
so
Blue
weird.
Link. How can I help you? Get the fuck out of my car. Stop looking at my fucking search history on my phone because I connect Apple CarPlay to you, you nosy bitch.
Well, okay, I think I just figured out where your problem is.
Here's the problem. Before you even go there, Rye, no, I fucking don't either. My car is not connected to a phone that has any personal information of me on it. The only thing that phone knows is lotuseffect.show as a website.
So you're half protected. The other half is that your car is still connected to Apple.
No. This is where you mistake. Just because it has the capability doesn't mean I use the capability. The only person
who's
ever...
Yeah, how do you turn it off?
That's the thing. You just don't fucking use it. It's always there.
Yeah, but the car the car itself is still logging everything.
Yeah, and the app is still installed.
No, it comes installed. That's the thing. I don't have any control to say strip all of your shit out of my car.
But you have to actually like plug the phone in order to use CarPlay. You actually have to like plug your phone in with a cable. So it's kind of.
Do you want to know why I went on the Odyssey?
Or you can do it with Bluetooth now.
You can do it through Bluetooth, and my son has Bluetooth to my car. So funny digression story. I'm parked behind him at the car wash. We're on the phone having a chit chat, and this dumb fucking car keeps grabbing the phone call because he is connected to my car through his Apple CarPlay. So I go to speak to him and I hear me, speak. I'm like, motherfucker, I literally have a hold of his phone call with me on my car. I hung up. And if you wanted to know why, I'm just going, no, because I can't have a conversation with you because it keeps stealing the fucking phone call off of your phone on my car.
So, side story, a couple months ago, I was in, it was one of the newer vans that hadn't quite been beat to crap, but it was also a 2024 model. I'm sitting in the queue waiting to go with all the other vans into the station to pick up all the packages. So it's early in, you know, right as we started shift and, you know, I'm sitting here in a parking lot with like 15 other vans. I'm just waiting to go in and suddenly my van starts ringing. It was the cell phone from one of the other drivers nearby had been connected to my van. Cause we don't use the same van every day. been using the van probably to play music or something, connected his cell phone to it. He gets a call while we're sitting here at the beginning of the day, and it doesn't go to his phone. It goes to my van.
Please tell me you fucked with whoever called him.
I did.
Well done, sir.
I did, and then I told him about it, and we had a good laugh, and he's like, oh, I really ought to call her and apologize. I'm like, yeah, you should also disconnect your phone from strange vans, but what do I know?
You know, that's the equation, if you will, of always log out of your account when you leave your school computer and the classroom.
Yeah, as somebody who has traveled, but not so much anymore, and oh my God, after that cruise, I had to actually talk about it. Because we're scheduling some stuff, and I was asked if I was going to be going for any events. I'm like, no, because
hard pass.
No, just not. Yeah. So because I can't trust the food, and I certainly can't trust some of the people out there. Jesus Christ.
Like, I will never understand people who connect their personal devices to a shared vehicle.
Because what I'm saying is there's times where I've had to rent cars and I've paired my phone to the thing, but what I do, right, is
did you wear a condom?
Well,
no fucking kidding, a car condom. There's one for you.
But yeah, the few times I've done it, I've also like immediately I go in and right before we get to to return it, I'll unpair it and delete all the stuff, and I even go and delete all the other people that have paired their phones with the fucking car.
But how many people do that phone? Such an anomaly.
Usually the maximum of five a car will allow you to pair with as far as phones. Yeah.
And it's probably that queue is
vans, it's more like 12.
Yeah. I don't tell.
Because I've gone through and sat there I've got some idle time and I'm just like, connect or, next phone, delete. Next phone, delete. Next phone.
But here's a question I have for the other two Bens in this conversation. Frankly, just why? Why do you need to connect your phone to the car? Maybe it's me, but I would much rather have my own personal AirPods, earbuds, whatever the fuck you roll with, on my device rather than.
That's exactly what I do.
I would much rather be connected personally where it's in my ears. No one else is hearing whatever I have going on. That's why, honestly, I run two sets of headphones in my car. One that runs my GPS and one that runs the personal shit, including my phone calls, because it's nobody's fucking business what I'm listening to or if I get a phone call. No, absolutely not. Including my, and especially, it's none of my car's business what I'm doing or saying.
Yeah, I'm actually, the only thing I ever do on my car anymore is, I used to, I've had the car for a while, but it's been my car. I'm the original owner of it, and so I'm not. So whatever data it has on me, it's got whatever it's got. But yeah, I don't. Fortunately, I have my car is just old enough that it doesn't have CarPlay or anything like that. So basically, the only thing I use it to do is to play music. I don't even use it to take phone calls anymore because I'm not.
I don't even drive
around that much. I drive my car like once a week or something. I mean, seriously,
it may surprise you to know that I have told a very small fib on this show. I do, in fact, carry a personal cell phone when I'm in the van. It doesn't have a SIM card. What it has is a podcast player and a Bluetooth connection on my earbud because I do not trust when they say when you pair your Bluetooth with someone with a piece of hardware, you're actually pairing your Bluetooth to every piece of hardware that they had ever paired with before. Which I think the original line was more about sexually transmitted diseases, but it's appropriate.
Yeah, no shit. I mean,
no, it really is.
Yeah, because it is kind of scary how much Bluetooth.
I have an old cell phone that doesn't even have a SIM card and lives in airplane mode forever. And I sync podcasts. I'll turn the Wi-Fi on at home long enough to sync podcasts and then turn the Wi-Fi off. But otherwise, it's just got Bluetooth on so that I can pair it with my earbud. That's it.
Okay, so I want to bring out the fact that when we were on the floating shit show, that's more or less exactly what we did, is we were required to have our shit on airplane mode and, connect to our Wi-Fi. No, I'm good. I've downloaded all the things I need to listen to, from podcast to music to whatever. I don't need to connect to your floating shit show. The only thing I connected for was to reach out to my son periodically, or maybe my mom, because she is getting up there in age, and just kind of send out, kind of send out the sin, like, you still alive? Everything good? Cat's good? See, okay, bye.
That's the difference between you and me, because when I went on a cruise, it was, we were at the dock and I took a picture of the bay and the boat and said, hey, wish you were here. Bye. Talk to you in a week. And then I shut off my phone. And no,
if it weren't there was the no checking in during the week. My mom is older and my son was caring for the cat. If I didn't have the cat.
Yeah, Mama Bemrose is no spring chicken. I just don't care.
Dude, that woman is a fucking gem. The show email she left last week was top notch. And kudos to your wife. And also,
fuck you.
I know you were complicit, Lisa. You bitch.
I was standing right there.
I knew you had to have been. Because I'm looking at the thing. I'm going, that's Dame Bemrose's phone number. But that's Mama. You bitch. You know you orchestrated this. I loved it. We loved every minute of it. And we thank her for that.
All right. Let's get this shit show on the final stretch.
Okay, so I have one more story.
All right.
And fishing training is pretty pointless, according to researchers. And so...
Wait a minute. Let me make sure I heard that right. Fishing as in P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G as in... Yeah, that.
Yeah, that. Exactly. Yeah,
no matter how you spell it, I kind of agree with that, but...
Yes. Okay. So this is, so I'll read a little bit from the story. It says, so the researchers enrolled more than 19,000 employees of the University of California, San Diego. I think that's what UCSD means, health system, and randomly split them into five groups, each member of which would see something different when they failed a phishing test randomly sent once a month to their workplace email accounts. So the control was its members got a 404 error if they clicked on a phishing link in the body of the email. Generic static. This group saw a static webpage containing general information about avoiding phishing scams. Generic interactive. This group was walked through an interactive question and answer exercise. Contextual
and
static.
And the fourth group is generic pwned.
Exactly. Contextual static. A static web page again, but this time showing the exact phishing lure the subject had received and pointing out that the warning signs were missed. Contextual interactive. An interactive Q&A session that walked the subject on what they missed and the specific lure they received. Now, over the 8 months of testing, however, there was little difference in improvement among the four groups that received different kinds of training. Those groups did improve a bit over the control group's performance by 1.7%. I mean, that's fucking rounding error. That's the plus or minus.
It really is.
Yeah. I mean,
it's the dancing monkey problem.
Yeah, exactly. It's the, yeah. So, and you know, and I mean, even.
Well, hold on. I have a question really quick. Because I've watched the training that your company puts you through for things such as this. Are there other companies out there who are not putting their employees through this training of how to spot this?
Oh, I'm sure.
Most of them?
Yeah, they all are, but...
So in other words, nobody's paying the fuck attention. They're just blindly doing the, I know what they want me to say, but in reality,
I would be
I'm still going to click on the two free tickets and a cruise.
I would be amazed if more than 25% of companies even do this kind of
hell, I think that's actually an overestimate, sir.
Yeah.
Sadly.
Yeah, it's...
Companies do not prioritize cybersecurity, period. Dot. It doesn't matter what aspect of it you're looking at. They're not prioritizing it because it costs a lot of money. You know what else costs a lot of money, folks? Breaches. I'm just saying.
Yeah, well, IT is when you have, you know, C-suite people trying to bean count and you aren't getting owned all the time, IT is nothing more than an entry in the cost column. And when you
until you get owned and it costs you 3 to 4 times what it would cost for that IT person's
entire career salary. Of course, the irony of IT, of course, is that
get owned and it costs
you something you don't need when they're doing well. You don't even know it's there. You're like, why are
we?
You
know, that's why
they get
works.
Cut because people look and say, why are we even spending money on this? I haven't heard anything about there. And anyone smart is going to look at this and say, when you haven't heard anything from your IT people, that's when you know you're doing all right.
Yeah, that's when you know or the money you're throwing at it is not being wasted because you're not hearing anything. You're not making the headlines. You're not receiving CVSS scores.
You know, and right up until you get to the point where, oh, we've just been lucky, but this person's firing rubber bands at the wall all day. But, you know, theoretically, you hire somebody competent. Oh, wait, Silicon Valley's not good at that.
The bottom line is no matter how good your IT security, et cetera, at some point you're going to possibly face a breach. It's inevitable because the bad guys are moving at least 2 steps ahead of the best IT security people in the industry. That's just the fact.
And like I said,
because
dancing
there's
monkey
more
problem.
Of them. And the more, you can, again, the more you put AI into the mix because it's faster, it's easier. Yeah, it's also a lot more fallible.
You can harden every single part of your computer systems as much as you possibly can, and it's still not enough because that is not the entirety of the system. Humans are often the easiest thing. You know, see back to my rant about marketing people and people who are easily persuaded by bullshit. Humans are one of the weakest links in your entire network. And, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with the name Dancing Monkey Problem. It sounds like Phoneboy is, but it's something, it was at least something that was told to me by, you know, one of the smartest engineers I've ever had way back in maybe 2004. Who he was fixing some super critical day zero vulnerability. And I had been assigned, hey, can you, you know, the normal tester is out today and we got to have this done today. Can you go test it? So I got to spend a day with this guy who literally thinks, breathes and eats security. And one of the things that I got from him and will never forget was that no matter what you do, to harden, you know, it was a problem in the, what was it? It was the browser, something about an email comes in and if you hover over the link or something, you know, one of those, Microsoft had about a billion of those bugs. But he was telling me that no matter how much you harden the software, people will click the links anywhere because the email promised them a dancing monkey. And you can throw as many dialogues up as you can. Are you sure you want to do this? This is very dangerous. This is, and the person will happily click away every single one of them because he wants to see a dancing monkey. That's it. That is a fundamental problem with IT security.
It is because, in essence, it... Now, I don't know verbatim all of the features that the products that Phoneboy's company secures against, but you would think, and Phoneboy, you're here to tell me, I'm pretty sure that the products that your company features, do they not have a way to ultimately detect phishing emails and intercept them essentially not getting to the end client?
Yeah, there's multiple ways to do that. I mean, but
yeah, there's
but,
all kinds of filtering, but now you're in a mousetrap, better mousetrap problem.
Yeah, exactly. Which is
right. And at the end of the day, it comes down to end users are dumb. Period. Dot. And like you said, they're always going to click on it because they want to see a dancing monkey.
Or even somebody. Okay, so all see here's and this is one of those maxims of cybersecurity is the bad guy only, you know, the good guy has to be right every time. The bad guy only has to be right once.
And see, that's why I am essentially and arguably super suspicious.
I think that's Sun Tzu.
Of everything. Anything that says, "Oh, you need to download this," even to the point I said I was going to have this rant, and this is the perfect place to have this rant because it kind of deals with security and things like that. So I use Affirm as a pay, you know, buy now, pay later platform. Back in March, now let that sink in for a second because we're at the end of August here. Back in March, I put in a complaint with security that my card had obviously been breached, so I burned it. I locked my new card and I burned my old card. If I am lying, I am dying. I get an email yesterday, maybe the day before. Now, that's 5 months for anyone who can't do real good math since I put the request in saying, hey, my card's been hacked. Now, their shit says, oh, you'll receive a correspondence or an answer, you know, 24 to 48 hours. 5 months, folks. And now I'm getting a message from their security person telling me, well, your card is locked, and basically giving me a lot of fluff. And I'm just looking at Phoneboy and I'm going, first of all, when the email came in, I went to the actual application itself. I didn't just click on the link in the email like, oh yeah, I deal with them, so it must be legitimate. I looked at where it was being sent from. I went into my application and dug deeper. Like, if there's actually a message in here, it's going to be in the app. It's much like, just period dot. Don't fucking click on links. Even if you trust the company, go to their website.
Yeah, at the risk of giving useful advice, whenever you get a random email that you were not expecting, unsolicited from
most of them these days, by the way.
Exactly.
But when you get a random email, like from your bank or someone you do business with, saying, you know, you need to hand over details or anything that triggers any of the red flags, and people should be training themselves for that, you do not ever click anything in the email. You know, I actually keep all my headers on, and I can spot most of the red flags, like, huh, this came from a domain that doesn't look right. But some of these companies will use domains like FQ2D5. You know. So what do you do if somebody says, well, your account is behind, is past due, please click on this to make a payment? Okay, never, ever click on it in the email.
Never.
What you do is you either go to the app, go to the website, or pick up a phone and dial an 800 number. Do not get information out of it. Look up their website. Look at your bill. Look at any other source of how to get a hold of these people that doesn't have anything to do with this email.
That was the whole reason.
And say,
I got
an email.
Yeah, that was the reason why I didn't click on it. Because it was like, you know, click here to see message or whatever. And I'm like, oh, I don't think so. Because how many... Seriously, if that had been a malicious email and I clicked that link, it could arguably have taken me anywhere that looked like, because I didn't know what the messaging was. It didn't give me anything except for like, Ben from a firm has sent you a
way message. Way back in the day, before everything was online, I had a roommate, one of my fraternity brothers in college, who got his account cleared out because he got an email saying something like, you know, you, oh, they, it was some email that was, looked like it was legit from his bank, and, you know, please log in. And I remember when it came in and said, hey, that doesn't look legit. You don't want to click on that. Oh, okay. No, just call their 800 number. Oh, okay. And he grabbed the 800 number out of the email and called it and gave them all his information.
No, he didn't. Out of the email.
Yeah, the email had a, please call this number if you have it. It was click this link or call this number.
Oh,
and the scammers
no red flag.
Actually had an 800 number set up.
Well, wow, they were in depth, weren't they?
You know, what they should have done is
dial 1-900, eat a dick.
Yeah, that's it.
No kidding. Okay.
But that's exactly it, Rye, is how many people are blindly clicking. And I'll give you an example. Most recently, there has been a deluge. I don't know if you're seeing it out there, but we're seeing it here, of these spam text messages saying, oh, you have an unpaid ticket. Your license is suspended. You're da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Click this link, this and that. And it's like, if you just look at the number alone that it's being sent from, it's a plus one, which means it's foreign, period,
or it's coming, or it's coming from like app, an iMessage or something like that,
right? It's not a legitimate phone number from an agency.
I know, by the way, there are no toll roads in Tennessee, so I don't know
where
let's
just point that out.
Yeah, so you know, you just kind of look around and you go, you know, okay,
well, put it this way, if there are, they're not in our area, and we're not traveling them, period, dot.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's...
And honestly, the amount of time... First of all, there's stories that are being published about this particular thing. But also, in the time that you and I have been receiving these ridiculous messages, we've both had to renew our driver's licenses or had some degree of check, if you will, that if indeed there was something on it, we would have known about. It's just ridiculous how some of these, you know, hackers, spammers, fraudsters, whatever, they actually get people who are like, oh my God, I don't want my license to be suspended. Let me click on this link where I can pay this fictitious ticket that doesn't actually exist. Why are people not calling your, or, you know, I mean, they're everywhere, kind of, honestly. Stop a cop. Call your local fucking department or go down there and say, look, I received this message. It says, I have a ticket. Don't just blindly go, oh, let me click on this link and give you my banking information, my credit card information to pay this fictitious ticket. And then, oh, shit, there goes all my money. Like, why? Please, someone explain to me why people are still clicking this shit instead of kind of doing their research. It's like
dancing monkeys.
Yeah. I mean, my oldest son was talking about certain things like, oh, I read this and I read that. And I completely shut him up because my first words out of my mouth when he's like, oh, I know it's real because I looked it up and this and that. I looked at him, I said, did you look it up on Snopes? Crickets.
Oh, Snopes is not the right site anymore.
Well, once upon a time it used to be, but the point of the matter is...
it was back in the day.
You're not doing a digging deep enough research. For some of the stuff that he's coming at me with, I'm just looking at him and go, does any of this just tickle your common sense brain cell?
Yeah, the first part should not be go to a website and ask if they've fact-checked it, because fact-checkers are...
Yeah, we know how accurate those are.
Yeah, but, you know, at some point, and I get that they're not teaching this in school anymore, but there's this thing that used to happen called critical thinking skills where...
Yeah.
Oh, no, they don't want critical thinkers anymore.
No, they want
everything that comes in, you be skeptical, and then you start asking important questions like, you know, who wants this? Or, you know, where's it coming from? Why would it be coming to me? Anyway.
Well, not to be political, but one of the biggest problems that we have is the TDS is running rampant in this country since 47 is slamming his big dick on the table and doing some really unorthodox shit that's trying to clean up the country. And it's becoming very unpopular with a lot of people. Their heads are lighting on fire and they're about it, but we're not going to be political. Do you gentlemen have anything else before my
I'm
going to
slam
story?
Through my last story because it made me chuckle and roll my eyes.
I like laughing.
Eye spraining is always helpful too. People are not adopting electric vehicles as much as they could. In fact, electric vehicle adoption only, you know, a month or so ago started going down for the first time since all the mandates went in.
Well,
and Ars Technica, Ars Technica wants to know why.
Water's fucking wet, bro. Have you not been paying attention to the fact that, A, the power grid can't handle going all electric by like 2030 since that's like...
Let's not bring in the impossible logistics to ruin
logic and reasoning in. What the hell am I thinking? Yeah.
So Ars Technica stepped out to find out why are people not adopting EVs like they should be. Like, if they were good little consumers, they would be.
Because they're extremely expensive, catch fire as soon as any water gets anywhere near them. And, the glue doesn't hold them together. But go on.
Well, there are some minor issues like that, yeah. But as far as Ars Technica is concerned, if you know, the first couple paragraphs of their article, the entire reason is probably, you know, they could not... even start a story, it's Trump's fault.
Water's wet. Again, everything is Trump's fault.
You know, in fact, one of the things they point out specifically is the loss of the electric vehicle incentive program. We're not paying people as much money to buy electric vehicles, and that might be causing the adoption to go down. And speaking as one of the people who's involuntarily paying for it, good. But, you know, again, trying not to be political. Anyway.
Okay, no, but wait a minute, Rye. There's only one thing to say about the fact that it's going down because of that.
Oh, bullshit.
Well, no, but they did ultimately, in the main part of the article, they settled on, they found a study from a company called Telemetry. Literally, it says Telemetry Vice President Sam, name that I can't pronounce. A market research study by Telemetry Vice President. Is there a telemetry company called Telemetry?
I think there might be. I mean,
okay. I guess I wouldn't be surprised. Redundant. Yeah, it's like if somebody's really not very original. Okay, fine. Anyway, did a study that confirmed that the real problem, the reason why people are not adopting electric vehicles, is because they're not cleaning out their garages.
You're joking.
Good God.
That's really the gist of the article. A market research study you know, they have confirmed that the biggest barrier when people are polled why they are not adopting EVs, the biggest barrier to adoption is fears and concerns about charging, which I think is pretty valid.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with the fact that they're afraid these things are going to catch fire in their garage and the insurance company said,
we just got done talking about how stupid the average person is. I don't think they think that far ahead. They really think this thing says I can drive 150 miles. What happens after that? And then they actually think about how am I going to charge it?
Well, and that's one of the snarky comments I make when people want to try, you know, because one of the most common questions I get about my car is it electric? Is it a hybrid? I said, absolutely not. It is all kinds of diesel fuel barking. On the top of which, when you have an EV, quite frankly, and you get what you deserve and what you pay for, because you're paying an exorbitant amount of money to have panels fall off, hello Cybertrucks, catch fire, pretty much any EV that involves the word Tesla. On top of which, dude, I'll put my gas-powered vroom vroom up against your EV any day, because while you're taking the hour to have to recharge it, I take 5 minutes refuel and I'm down the road.
These EVs have powerful motors. They will absolutely destroy you for the first 150 miles. They are
and after
natural
that, they're
sprinters.
Not shit. By the time,
dwarves are natural sprinters.
Yeah, but I'm going to catch up with you, and then I'm going to right past you while you're still charging.
Which again, you know, I don't hate EVs. They have their niche. It's like a golf cart for puttering around the city. You're probably in a pretty good place. If you need to go to the next city, screw you. Stick to your 15-minute city.
Yeah, but the problem of which is how much. Quote, you know, because most people who say, oh, I bought an EV because I care about the environment. How much pollution is being put in the air by the construction of those lithium ion batteries? And let's just not even get into
I think there's definitely information. There's definitely ignored information out there that the construction of an EV over the lifetime of an EV, it doesn't.
Find the gambling is going on in here.
Well, it's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Over the lifetime of an EV, there's quite a lot of evidence out there that's not being properly analyzed because it's a taboo subject, that, the lifetime of an EV is not long enough to recoup any environmental benefit from the more difficult manufacturing process. But that's ultimately the problem, as identified by this survey from Telemetry. They actually went through, and there was a little line of logic that was, only 42% of EV owners park near a 240-volt charger. But they determined from surveys that this number could grow to 68% if the people changed their parking behavior. And when asked why, what's wrong with the parking behavior, why can't you park closer to an outlet? A lot of people say, well, I have to park in my driveway and I can't park in the garage. So ultimately, the result of the survey, or more likely what Ars Technica took from this, because I didn't read the survey in this case, I'm sorry, totally lazy, is that people need cleaner garages, and then EV adoption will go up.
Okay, we are ignoring the fact insurance companies have said you're not allowed to park these rolling bombs inside
your
garages. I love
this. Everything that I say is causing you to go into a five-minute rant against EVs.
But am I wrong, Rye?
No, not in the least, I'm entertained.
I'm sorry. My logical brain is having an epileptic fit right now, because the logic these people are putting forth, like, oh, it's not that they're rolling bombs. It's not that the electric grid cannot keep up.
No,
the insurance companies
want
nothing to do with this. It's all about the fact you have a cluttered garage and need to clean it out.
It's that these slobs have too much crap in their garage. That's the only reason.
It's the Kippel defense. You have to love it. By the way, the Kippel defense is a great show title.
I'm not familiar with that. You're going to have to explain that one.
Kippel?
Philip K. Dick. This is the book on which the movie Blade Runner was written on. But Kippel is all that shit that we gather, and it's like the wrapping paper from whatever bullshit we bought. This is all the stuff, it's the result of consumerism.
The useless shit you consume or collect, excuse me.
I know. Following you. I have 25 years of that in this house.
It's a Philip K. Dick term.
We've kind of adopted it. Anything that's not essential in your life is ultimately kipple.
Yeah, and it's right. you can only win the battle against kipple. You cannot win the battle against kipple except temporarily and in one spot.
Because it always multiplies.
Yeah, because. We always consume sort of mindlessly, and that's sort of the debris of consumption is kipple.
Yes, I'm definitely picking up what you're putting down, because I look over at my house and, you know, let me tell you, when I turned this room into a podcast studio, there was absolutely no need to put junk on the walls to try to reduce sound reflections, because sound is absorbed by 20 years of clutter in this room.
Well, and some of it is liquor bottles, I'm pretty sure, right?
I drank the fifth.
I drank the fifth. I think drink the fifth is a show title at this point.
All right. Well, hope you picked up on some of the sarcasm when I was pointing out the cluttered garage being the only possible reason. But I just, like, my mouth was on the desk when I was reading this bullshit from Ars Technica, where they're certain that, if people were just cleaner, they'd drive more EVs. I mean, can you fault the logic? Can you even find any logic?
There is no logic.
The rest of it, by the way, it does in fact make a mention that it turns out that the overwhelming majority of electric vehicles are in single family homes, and that having an electric vehicle in a quote multifamily home, the kind of place where you don't have a personal garage and you have to park either on the street or in communal parking or something like that, is a quote unsolved problem. The word unsolvable might also be appropriate there, but Ars Technica didn't really dig into that. They were just convinced that people just need better garages.
So in other words, they did absolutely the minimum amount of research and work.
I think I just spent more time on this story than they did.
I think you're correct. So Phoneboy has nothing else, but I have one more that I said was connected to the other, which is that multiple top password managers are vulnerable to password stealing, clickjacking attacks. I talked about this. Some of the way this is happening is because, as you know, DEFCON 33, you gotta love it. Yeah, apparently.
Hey, do we need to stop and get Phoneboy some new lungs? Because that's coming through your mic.
No kidding. So, like, are you dead over there? Can I help you with something?
Oh, no. I'm not dead yet. Trust me.
Not yet.
Yeah.
Well, you're working on it.
Irrelevant to the fact that the recent DEFCON 33 conference, an independent researcher unveiled a clickjacking attack he claimed could exploit the autofill capabilities of six of the biggest password managers. The attack is able to steal passwords, two-factor authentication codes, and credit card details, making it a serious concern for tens of millions of password manager users. Now, he tested it against versions of 1Password, Bitwarden, which concerned me, NPass, iCloud Password, LastPass, which, if anyone knows, LastPass has a shitty reputation for security, so let's just not worry.
We still need
If you're still using LastPass,
We still was going to do the analysis of that that you did for your class. We still haven't done
that. If you're still using LastPass, you might just not have attended that excellent presentation made by a couple months ago. But
yeah,
using LastPass, I won't say you deserve what you get. I'll say you probably should consider changing to another.
Yeah, like find a more reliable one. Now, I have a question, Phoneboy, because
I'm pleased that you didn't mention the one I use, though.
Well, just wait, I might get there. Now, Log Me Once, that's not also LastPass, because I know at one point they had changed ownership.
That used to be Log Me In. I think.
That's... Oh, Log Me In. That's it. Okay, I got confused.
Yeah, I don't remember if they. Okay. I don't remember if they're part of the same company or not anymore. I'm not sure of that one, but I've never heard of that one.
This is what bothered me, because the attack that was simulated at DEFCON 33 was one that found browser-based variants could leak stored data under the right conditions. Now, the reason this was kind of interesting to me is because with my digital forensics class, we're talking about browser leak. And our instructor wants us to test a few different browsers to see which one leaks the most. And I've actually thought about talking to Phoneboy because he pays for Kagi, and I'd like to know what kind of leakage is going on with them. But...
And is it anal?
It probably is, and the developers should probably see a doctor. But the attack was tested against 1Password, Bitwarden, Endpass, iCloud Passwords, LastPass, and LogMeOnce. And like I said, it found that browser-based variants could leak stored data under the right conditions. Now, it does rely on using a website that uses opacity settings, overlays, or a pointer event to make the autofill function on the web-based password manager to appear invisible.
In other words, a JavaScript-infused website.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, the websites can either be malicious or legitimate that have been compromised. Gee, what a surprise. Again, we see CAPTCHA being a problem because the attacker uses a pop-up CAPTCHA that deliberately places the user's click on the hidden password manager controls, autofilling those credentials into the form and stealing them. It's kind of like a perfect John the Ripper, isn't it? I'm telling you. So what makes it even more concerning is that the attacker could use a universal attack script to identify the password manager active on the web browser.
What genius thought it was a good idea for browsers to be able to take control of your cursor and put them in a certain spot?
I would love to know that.
Google.
Yeah.
Yeah. the ones who define the fucking web standard that seems everybody uses now, because of course, you know, web browsers are much like mobile phones. You have three choices at least. You either have the Tom Collins one with Safari, you have something that's based on, you know, Firefox, or you have something that's based on Chrome. Most of the browsers are based on Chrome. So,
and to add to what Ryan was talking about, okay, include like several of these, okay, including several DOM-based subtypes that abuse the opacity at the element, the parent element, the root, the overlay, as well as an attack that can trigger autofill, anywhere the cursor's placed. So like you said, who the fuck thought it was a great idea to make it wherever the cursor is placed that you can kind of take over?
Now, Google. Here's a,
exactly, Google. Now, here's the thing. The guy who basically did the attack at DEF CON 33 notified the companies that he tested the attack vector and stated that the disclosure would be made in August at DEF CON 33. So he told them in advance, look, we're going to call your asses out. And cybersecurity researchers at Socket verified
he tell them behind closed doors that they have a bug, or is he just taunting them?
He basically backdoor let them know, like, hey, you have a problem, and this is
it's pretty common. It's called disclosure.
If he's not giving the vendor the details, he's just a douche. But
No. He was full disclosure, letting them know, this is what you're dealing with. I'm going to go public at DEF CON 33 August. Get your shit
unless
together
you fix
before.
It. Yeah.
Okay. So he notifies them, and researchers at Socket verified his method and assisted in notifying the affected password managers. Okay. Now, here's the thing. Several of the managers that remain vulnerable to the attack include 1Password 811427, Bitwarden 2025.70, NPass 6.11.6, a partial fix was implemented in 6.11.4.2. iCloud Passwords 6.1.25, LastPass 4.146.3, and LogMeOnce 7.12.4. Now, the latest versions of Dashlane, NordPass, ProtonPass, RoboForm, and Keeper have all been patched against his demonstrated attack vector, and LastPass and LogMeOnce are currently working on fixes for the attack. A few of the companies did issue statements, including LastPass, who said, oh, we appreciate the work of security researchers like this person who help raise awareness about potential threats and improve industry-wide security. The vulnerability he uncovered highlights a broad challenge facing all password managers, striking the right balance between user experience and convenience while also addressing evolving threat models. So basically, bark, bark, woof, woof.
Yeah, that's PR.
Hugely, hugely. Now, Password One, of course, took an interesting approach saying, oh, clickjacking isn't unique to the Password One browser extension. It's a long-standing web attack technique that affects websites and browser extensions broadly. Wow, what
okay,
a way
buddy.
To say,
so,
don't look over here.
Yeah. Okay, buddy, but is that an excuse? Are you saying you don't need to fix it?
I think that is, in my opinion, an excuse. Whether or not it's saying we don't have to fix it, it's definitely, like I said, a way of saying, don't look over here.
Nothing to see here.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that they continued their statement by saying, we take this and all security concerns seriously, that just tells you it's dripping with PR.
Yes, it does.
Well, I think we've gotten through.
We've exhausted all the stories. Yeah. We have raged against.
I got to get out of here and go to my side gig of selling extension cables to people with cluttered garages.
Yes, exactly.
That's too damn funny.
We've spent almost 2 hours raging against the machine.
But, we have, and we're inviting you all to hang out for Rideshare Radio, which will be actually kicking off a little later than it usual is because it's after 10 p.m. Central time.
That's right. So, but I guess we have to sort of end this. And so, okay, well, we'll do this again in 2 weeks. So that means we'll have to confirm the dates and everything behind the mic. But until next time, I guess I'm Phone Boy,
and I'm Phoenix,
and. Who am I again? Oh, that's right, Sir Bemrose.
It's game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we gonna do now? What are we gonna do?